Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. Five Democratic congressional leaders call on President Reagan at the White House this morning to talk about a tax cut. And as we hear from Jed Duval, Mr. Reagan will be turning on the charm, but it will be charm with a bite.
Mr. Reagan will say nicely that he hopes they will lead the mainline Democrats into a compromise tax cut plan. His sort of compromise, not theirs. Behind the smiles will be the White House feeling that the Reagan side has the horses, has the vote strength in the House, a solid Republican lineup, and the necessary number of conservative Democrats, those who supported the Reagan budget cuts. Hence the unofficial private explanations here over the weekend that the president will be saying to the leaders of the Democratic side, "We hope you'll go along, if not, fine." The implication is clear, we'll do it without you if necessary. Democrats, fearing the inflationary effects of tax cuts, want smaller reductions for a year. The administration, looking for the tax cut to stimulate the economy, wants a 3-year cut, 10% a year, and is willing to compromise on 5% the first year, 10% the rest of the way. The Democratic leaders coming in here today will have to judge not so much the economic arguments, but the political count to see if they want to call the president's hand. Jed Duval, CBS News, the White House.
And obviously, the leaders will have to reckon with those conservative Democrats who already have been talking with White House officials about a compromise close to what the president has in mind. Those Democrats will hold a strategy session of their own tomorrow. Some observers are calling it Beirut's bloodiest weekend since the end of the Civil War 6 years ago. The fighting flared up Saturday, roared on all day yesterday, and finally subsided during the night. But Larry Pintack reports that it's not really over yet.
Sporadic artillery and machine gun fire continues this morning following a night of violence in the Lebanese capital. Some 20 people have been killed since Saturday and 270 more wounded in the fighting. In late afternoon yesterday, gunmen on both sides trained their artillery against crowded beaches, sending thousands of Sunday holidaymakers running for cover and causing massive traffic jams in the panic. Lebanon's leftists charged that the Christian rightists had escalated the fighting in coordination with Israel, which staged raids on Palestinian bases last week. Israeli jets this morning have staged several reconnaissance flights over Beirut, breaking the sound barrier and prompting Palestinian anti-aircraft batteries to open up. The Libyan news agency, meanwhile, reports that the bodies of four Libyan soldiers killed in last week's Israeli raids have been flown home for burial. Israel claims that Libyans were manning SAM-9 surface-to-air missile batteries scattered among the Palestinian camps south of the capital. Larry Pintack, CBS News, Beirut.
There was an assassination in Brussels this morning. The victim, Naim Khader, the Palestine Liberation Organization's chief representative in Belgium. Michael Landers reports what happened.
Khader was gunned down on the steps of his apartment house this morning as he was going to the PLO office a few hundred yards away. A gunman fired 5 shots at Khader, who died as he was being rushed to a hospital. The killer escaped and police launched an immediate manhunt for the gunman. Shortly after the shooting, the PLO office here issued a statement charging that Israeli Secret Service agents were without doubt responsible for the murder. The Israeli embassy in Brussels countered with a sharp denial and a statement recalling that Palestinian splinter groups are known to have carried out other attacks on PLO representatives. As the PLO man in Belgium, Naim Khader earned a reputation among European diplomats as a skilled and articulate spokesman for the Palestinian cause. He maintained regular contacts with the European common market here, even though the PLO does not have full-scale diplomatic status in Belgium. In the past year, the common market countries have come out in favor of the PLO's role in the Middle East peace negotiations and have launched a European diplomatic initiative to try to ease the Mideast crisis. Michael Landers, CBS News, Brussels.
The government of Bangladesh today says it has crushed the revolt by mutinous army officers who assassinated President Zia-ur Rahman day before yesterday. The Press Trust of India says the leader of the unsuccessful coup has been arrested. But Dave Hatcher reports from Bangkok, Thailand, that the attempt will have lasting effects.
President Zia's death leaves a definite power vacuum in Bangladesh in the form of legal succession process for the president's job. Bangladesh is one of the world's youngest, poorest, and most overcrowded countries, created out of East Pakistan 10 years ago, now with 90 million people jammed into a land area smaller than that of Wisconsin. Largely through the force of Zia's personality and untiring trips around his country, Bangladesh had become nearly self-sufficient in food and begun to channel massive foreign aid into industrial development. Rebel officers called him a narrow-minded dictator, but with his killing, Bangladesh may find itself in a frantic scramble for power, not only by other elements of the military, but also by opposition factions wanting to get Zia out of power. Dave Hatcher, CBS News, Bangkok.
Vice President Abdus Sattar has become acting president, succeeding Zia. The Teamsters Union opens its annual convention today in Las Vegas, and we'll hear about it from Lem Tucker.
It is the Teamsters' 22nd National Convention, but not the first to convene with a host of problems facing it. Chief among those, its image. Interim President Roy Williams will almost certainly be elected to a full five-year term. His problems with the Senate subcommittee, whose questions about allegations of ties to organized crime he refused to answer, under recent federal indictment, do not seem to be publicly bothering the 2,000 or so delegates here. The Teamsters for Democratic Union will run a candidate against Williams, but the group's members have already conceded defeat. In a prepared greeting to delegates, Roy Williams reminded them that the union has pledged its cooperation to the Reagan administration's anti-inflation policies. And Williams says Teamsters must now be prepared to prove a willingness and a desire to make good on that pledge. One Teamster official called those words Williams' warning to his members that for them, used to high wage increases over the years, the solid days may be over. Lem Tucker, CBS News, Las Vegas.
The president of the mine workers is barnstorming this week for reasons explained by Marty Sender in Birmingham, Alabama.
Six states in 6 days is the punishing pace Sam Church has set for himself this week. The portly president of the United Mine Workers Union is hopscotching eastern and southern coal mining districts in an effort to sell a contract to the nation's 160,000 coal miners who've been out on strike for over 9 weeks. Embarrassed in April when his union overwhelmingly vetoed a contract he supported, Church told miners in Birmingham, Alabama Sunday that he believes the latest agreement will pass.
I really can't see any reason why this contract would be voted down. I just don't see any problem with it.
Reaction to the contract seems favorable, though many miners say they'll wait until they actually read it before making up their minds. The 40-month proposal calls for 37% increases in wages and the restoration of royalty payments for non-union coal, a provision that was not in the first proposal and probably caused its rejection. Church will be greeted by a rally in Beckley, West Virginia this morning, and by week's end he will have visited miners in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, and Virginia. Voting on the contract is Saturday, tabulation Sunday, and if the vote is favorable, union mines could be open as early as a week from today. Marty Sender, CBS News, Birmingham, Alabama.
The 6th Van Cliburn International Piano Competition ended last evening in Fort Worth, Texas. Steve Croft reports the finale.
It is one of the four great musical competitions of the world. The winner gets $12,000, several years of concert bookings, and becomes, as one writer put it, a household word overnight, at least in homes where classical music is heard. That man is André-Michel Schub, a Parisian-born American, shy almost to the point of being an introvert, at least until he sits down at the Steinway. Was announced, European concert managers were after him. Within minutes, he was playing before millions of Americans on public television. Schub is the first American to win the award in 19 years, and according to the critics, has the potential to become another Rudolph Serkin. Steve Croft, CBS News, Fort Worth.
Second place honors went equally to Panayas Liras of New York and Santiago Rodriguez of Adelphi, Maryland. Former U.S. Congressman Carl Vinson of Georgia died early this morning at a hospital in Milledgeville, Georgia, at the age of 97. He served 50 consecutive years in the House of Representatives, an all-time record, and for many of those years, he was one of the most powerful figures in national politics. A nuclear carrier named after him is scheduled for commissioning next year. The dollar gained a bit today against the British pound, but declined against the other major currencies. Gold is higher. The price was fixed in London at $481.25 an ounce, up around two.
I'm Marlene Sanders reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The president, reports say, will tell Senate and House Democratic leaders that he expects a group of Southern Democrats to support his three-year 30% tax cut plan and that he really doesn't need this group's backing, though he would welcome it. Presidential aides say that while Mr. Reagan continues to believe his plan is the best, he will listen to all alternatives. More news after this.
Reach out and touch someone.
Hello?
Is this Joshua Superstar?
Yeah, Gramps, is this you? Are you here?
No, I'm here.
Where?
Oh, I haven't talked to you in a long time.
I know.
Well, hey, how's the basketball team?
Oh, we're not doing so well. See, we only got one guy over 5 feet, and he never shows up. So, Gramps, when you coming to see me?
Well, as soon as you and your team get into the playoffs, Josh.
Oh, well, you're not going to be here for a long time.
Well, in that case, maybe I can get your mom and dad to bring you down to see your grandma and me.
What, you have a basketball team?
Well, as a matter of fact, I do, but I don't think we're going to get in the playoffs either. You see, we only got one guy that's under 75, and he never shows up either.
Well, I'm going to come anyway, because I want to see you play.
Reach out and touch someone.
The Bell System.
South Africa observed its 20th anniversary today as a white minority-ruled republic. Alan Pizzi reports from Durban.
The day was highlighted by a 90-minute parade to display South Africa's military might. Air-ice jets flew over, and locally made armored cars, missiles, and even tanks rumbled down the main street of this resort city. Massive security was enforced, with 600 police on duty, as well as some 10,000 troops taking part in the parade and controlling crowds. The heavy security was to counter any demonstrations by those against the festival. White students, black political groups, and trade unions have all opposed the month-long Republic Day festival, which cost an estimated $90 million. Only hours before the parade began, gasoline bombs were thrown into three offices of the main opposition Progressive Federal Party in Johannesburg, apparently because they participate in the present political system. And yesterday, black students burned a number of South African flags in protest. But in Durban, all was quiet except for the pomp and ceremony of the band. Alan Pizzi, CBS News, Durban.
The government of Bangladesh today claimed the 48-hour rebellion led by army officers is over. On Saturday, the leaders of the attempted coup assassinated President Ziaur Rahman and took over the city of Chittagong. Government forces say the rebellion was confined to that port city and that the rebels failed to attract the support of other military units. The rebel chief and six of his officers have been taken prisoner. After a three-month shutdown, the buses in Birmingham, Alabama are rolling again. The public transit system had run out of funds, leaving 30,000 riders to find other means to get around. The newly reopened system will operate on money provided in part by the state legislature. Birmingham citizens are paying 80 cents a ride. Service is only partially restored, and city officials say it could come to a halt again in the fall. In northeast Pennsylvania, about 2,000 hard coal miners have gone back to work following their weekend ratification of a new three-year contract. UMW President Sam Church, on a lobbying swing through coal mining regions, says he's optimistic that the country's 160,000 soft coal miners will approve the proposed contract. They will vote on Saturday. The seesawing prime rate went down again today. Southwest Bank of St. Louis lowered its prime from 20.5 to 19.5. Chemical Bank and Morgan Guaranty of New York and Illinois Continental dropped their rate to a half point, dropped it a half point to 20%. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones average is up 10.10, volume on the big board nearly 17 million shares. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 1,001.85. More news after this.
Let a three-time Indy 500 winner and current national driving champion tell you why he asks for Pennzoil Motor Oil.
Hi, I'm Johnny Rutherford. We use Pennzoil in the race car for top engine protection at high speeds. But in my own car, I want engine protection plus good gas mileage. That's why I'm more of a Pennzoil fan now than ever. Because Pennzoil does save gasoline.
Johnny's right. You see, Pennzoil saves gasoline because it helps an engine run easier. And, as you know, the easier an engine runs, the less gasoline it drinks up. Trust three-time Indy 500 winner Johnny Rutherford. He knows. He asks for gas-saving Pennzoil. Quality in every extra mile. Available in 10W30 and 10W40.
America has asked.
Just last week, President Reagan restated his support for a volunteer army when he spoke at the West Point commencement. Even so, Selective Service said today it's launching a nationwide search for civilians to serve on draft boards, just in case. governor of each state is responsible for nominating board members who serve without pay. I'm Arlene Sanders, CBS News.
CBS News. White House meetings on the president's tax cut plan, on gun control and Northern Ireland. I'm Richard C. Hautelet reporting on the CBS Radio Network. 9 weeks after he was shot, President Reagan is back on an almost full schedule. He's meeting at this hour with five leading Democrats of the House and the Senate. The subject, exploration of chances for a compromise on the administration's plan to cut taxes 30% over 3 years. The Democrats want a smaller reduction for 1 year, checking then on the state of the economy to decide whether and how to proceed. President Reagan is reportedly insisting on the 3-year program, but possibly cutting the first year's reduction to 5%. He is said to feel that the mood of the country would override Democratic objections. Before the tax meeting, the president had a previously unannounced private talk with Senator Edward Kennedy. Kennedy asked for the meeting, and unidentified sources say he wanted to discuss gun control and Northern Ireland. Kennedy has long sponsored gun control legislation. He is now working for a measure to ban the manufacture, sale, and importation of small handguns called Saturday Night Specials. Mr. Reagan has remained adamantly opposed to gun control legislation. On Northern Ireland, Kennedy has been urging the British government to compromise on the demands of the IRA hunger strikers in Belfast's Mays Prison. More news after this.
This is E.G. Marshall with a question. Of all medications for acid indigestion or heartburn relief, which one is right for you? For years, Maalox has been recommended most by doctors. Now, the antacid ingredients in Maalox, plus an extra ingredient, are in Maalox Plus tablets. Smooth, good-tasting, and Maalox Plus tablets work fast to relieve acid indigestion or heartburn. But don't just take my word for it. Try Maalox Plus tablets. You'll find you can't do better.
Use only as directed.
Mailroom.
Jerry, it's Mary in production. I have a revised script and it's got to arrive on the coast by tomorrow.
Hey, take it easy. I'll use express mail service at the post office. For under $10, your script will fly coast to coast overnight.
Under $10? Overnight delivery too? Oh, Jerry, you're a genius.
Yeah, I know.
Express mail next day service in over 2,000 post offices. When you need it overnight, we deliver. Sponsored by your postal service.
The Supreme Court has ruled that Americans have a constitutional right to dance in the nude. Details on today's action from Fred Graham in Washington.
The case came from Mount Ephraim, New Jersey, but the decision would apply to any community in the land. It concerned a zoning ordinance that did not permit nude dancing in the town, and the owners of an adult bookstore were convicted after they installed a coin-operated booth that permitted the viewer to see a live woman dancing in the nude. But today, the Supreme Court ruled that nude dancing is a form of free expression that is protected by the First Amendment to the Constitution, and that while some nude dancing might be obscene, some other might not. Thus, the court said it is unconstitutional for any community to pass a law banning all nude dancing. Dissenting Justices Berger and Rehnquist said that if the residents of a little town like Mount Ephraim find nude dancing objectionable and want to ban it, then that should be permitted by the Constitution. Fred Graham, CBS News, Washington.
The Selective Service says it's begun a nationwide search for draft board workers in case the boards ever need to be set up again. Officials say they're looking for a total of 10,000 board members for training during peacetime, despite President Reagan's commitment to a volunteer army. Sources in the Reagan administration say American Second Lieutenant Christopher Cook gave information to the Soviets that was so sensitive that several secret codes had to be changed. The sources say Cook's information required changing targets, codes, and security for the nation's Titan missile program. Cook is a missile launching officer now confined at a military base on charges of making unauthorized visits to the Soviet embassy in Washington. Stocks and other news after this.
Dear sir, who last night at one of the city's finest restaurants sent back the chef's celebrated duck a l'orange because the sauce was too cloying for your particular palate, whose wife said, "Sometimes I don't understand you." Well, sir, we understand you. We're the investment firm of Dean Witter Reynolds, and no matter how demanding you are, we can help put a smile on your face.
You look like you just heard from Dean Witter.
Dean Witter knows to win over investors, you've got to produce results. And our investment programs can help do just that. Whether those plans help you cope with today's economy or better prepare you for tomorrow, Dean Witter can give even the most demanding investor something to smile about. Dean Witter Reynolds, one investment firm you'll be glad to hear from.
You look like you just heard from Dean Witter.
Member SIPC.
Several additional major banks today cut their prime lending rate a half point to 20%. And one smaller bank, the Southwest in St. Louis, went further, cutting its prime to 19.5%. That was good news on Wall Street. At this hour, the Dow Jones average is up 9.92. Volume on the big board, 29 million shares. The Dow Jones industrial average stands now at 1,001.67. Richard C. Hotelet, CBS News.